Von unten im Gespräch. Diskussionen, Interviews, Gesprächsrunden zu aktuellen Themen. Eine Sendung der Nachrichtenredaktion von Radio Helsinki.
The question of who profits from pushbacks, a few people have asked that, or are asking that. I'm not sure it's a question of like profit. As such, there's obviously people who make money out of it from selling life rafts to people. There's, companies who sell cars to the police, they drive around in the woods in to, hunt people down, whatever it might be. But I guess the question is who pays for the pushbacks? Because, people who push other people back. And, if they're Greek police officers, border guards, I forget what the exact rules say about payment of salaries for officials from EU funds, but, EU funds would have been used to pay for the police station, which allows the Greek state to put money somewhere else. They would have been used to pay for vehicles. They would have been used to pay for radio systems. Certainly there is EU money, intimately tied up in this whole pushbacks complex.
Basically, the money that's been using to increase police forces, both in the Evros border and in the islands, to purchase new Coast Guard vessels that we know are being used to carry out pushbacks. So in terms of who is responsible, I think at this point we can say that if the European Commission is giving Greece money to buy new Coast Guard vessels, they have knowledge that these are going to be used to commit pushbacks. So at this point, they also should be held responsible for this.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Voices of Mytilene. I am Toby, your host. In this episode, we will try to find out how the European Union is implicated in the systematic and highly illegal pushbacks that are happening on an almost daily basis here in Greece, and how EU money, which is our tax money, is supporting the Greek state in continuing this practice. Along the way, we will take a small detour to Western Africa to have a look and how this is part of a pattern that manifests itself in different forms and in many different places. Based on the evidence that is publicly available, we can conclude that the Hellenic Coast Guard is most certainly responsible for conducting pushbacks at sea. For the pushbacks on land, however, it has been very unclear so far. This is because almost all of the testimonies from migrants themselves describe the perpetrators as uniformed, masked men with no identifying marks or insignias. A pushback happens when migrants traveling by boat are forcibly returned to, in the case of Lesbos, Turkish waters. This is usually achieved by removing the engine from the boat and dragging it back by rope, or by removing the people from their boat and putting them on a life raft and pushing them into Turkish waters. The second common form of pushbacks that happen are from land. These happen after the people have arrived on shore. Instead of being taken to the camp for registration, they're rounded up by a group of unidentified masked men and put on a boat or life raft to be pushed back at sea, again into Turkish waters. Both of these methods often includes very violent behavior from the authorities. The practice known as pushbacks and the organizations or people who perpetrate them are part of a larger structural system of violence and exclusion. This system is supported by an industry that sustains itself by profits made from various sources, both obvious and obscured. Whilst the practice itself is not unique to Greece or even Europe, pushbacks have frequently appeared in the international news since March 2020. That is when the Greek state started in earnest to systematically push back migrants. Multiple reports have been published in renowned news outlets like the New York Times, The Guardian, or Der Spiegel. However, the Greek state has denied engaging in pushbacks as structurally as they have been practicing them. As heard here in a press statement by Kyriakos Mitsotakis, Prime Minister of Greece, 2 years ago.
What I will not accept is that in this office you will insult me or the Greek people with accusations and expressions that are not supported by material facts when this country has been dealing with a migration crisis of unprecedented intensity, has been saving hundreds, if not thousands, people at sea. We just rescued 250 people in danger of drowning south of Crete. We are doing this every single day, rescuing people at sea, while at the same time, yes, we are intercepting boats that come from Turkey, as we have the right to do in accordance with European regulation, and waiting for the Turkish Coast Guard to come and pick them up to return them to Turkey.
No matter the denial, the evidence is irrefutable. Médecins Sans Frontières, who have been attending to migrants who just landed on the shores of Lesbos, interrupted a pushback in progress. This was the public press statement from their coordinator on the situation.
We started running in the direction of the screaming, and when we arrived, we found everybody crying, children, women and men, beneath the bush. Then when we saw better the situation, we found three people handcuffed very tight with plastic handcuff. We found some people injured for some violence. Finally, we managed to support the 22 people. And then we went back. We provide them with food, water, and psychological support. In terms of testimonies, 7-8 people were there a few minutes we arrived. They were saying that they were doctor and they had food, and they start to beat them when they found. They were trying to handcuff the men. When they hear that we were coming, they escape, and they left three people handcuffed.
Starting around March 2020, we started receiving information from people who had been pushed back from Greece to Turkey. As most people know, pushbacks across borders is not something new, especially the border of Greece and Turkey. It's been happening systematically, especially in the northern border, for years. But what we saw starting in March 2020 is that it started to be a systematic policy of the government, also in the Aegean region.
But who pays for these activities and who profits from them? To answer that question, we have spoken to Chris Jones from State Watch, Lorraine from Legal Center Lesbos, and Hibai, an independent journalist.
Well, I'm the director of State Watch. I've worked here for, this year will be 13 years, so yeah, just over 12 years at the minute. And I became the director in September 2020. I mean, my work here has mainly focused on issues concerning policing, security, in particular security and surveillance technologies, counter-terrorism policies, also asylum, immigration and border controls. And State Watch exists to produce critical research and policy analysis and investigative journalism on those and other issues, essentially issues concerning the repressive agencies and repressive powers of states.
I'm Ibai Arbide. I'm a reporter. I've been covering the so-called refugee crisis in this part of the world, and also migrations and border policies around the world, specifically in Senegal and in other parts of Africa. Last year I was shooting some documentaries there with the cooperative I work on. So yeah, I'm familiar with the situation of the people's movement from Africa to Europe, but also inside Africa.
I'm Lorraine. I'm a lawyer that's been working here in Lesbos the past nearly 7 years at the Legal Center Lesbos, which is an organization that was started in response to the EU-Turkey deal with kind of a dual purpose of both accompanying and providing legal consultation and representation to people who were arriving here from Turkey and finding themselves in this new context of a prison island that started at that time, and also having a political position of wanting to work against these EU policies, these anti-migration EU policies. So that's taken various into various different lines of work over the years, depending on the context.
Mechanisms like the Internal Security Fund, among others, are the main source of income for not only Frontex, but are also used to acquire vessels and equipment for the Hellenic Coast Guard. Recently, it was made known that the Hellenic Coast Guard will get 50 new patrol boats for little over 105 million euros, co-funded by one such fund, in this case, the Integrated Border Management Fund. Tax money is continuously made available to these organizations despite the fact that they are structurally involved in this deadly practice. In addition, this is not a unique or even rare use of EU funds, and it is part of a structural pattern of EU funds being used to do harm and increase suffering for the sake of monetary gain and racist ideologies. But what do these different funds mean? Since their official explanations are often vague, what they are being used for is often hard to find out. For example, some of these funds are meant for anti-terrorist activities, but are instead explicitly used to increase border surveillance with the aim of deterring migrants. Here is Chris from Statewatch.
There's the Internal Security Fund, which is a bit different. Part of it is used for the development of EU databases and EU level information systems and things like that. But a proportion also goes to the member states, and they use it for projects. That one is basically related to policing and law enforcement. So whatever the current priorities are, obviously terrorism and radicalization, organized crime, cybercrime, drugs, member states can use the money to buy new infrastructure, or it might pay for vehicles or equipment, or to set up connections to like EU or international databases. And then there's a proportion of the money that goes out in a similar way to the security research program. There'll be a work program every year, and which invites proposals from different member states or different consortiums. So there might be for some cross-border project between three or four police forces that want to do something in relation to migrant smuggling or human trafficking.
So the Internal Security Fund is the fund that is more directly used to pay for border security, police forces and adjacent operations in the European Union.
So the Internal Security Fund and the Security Research Programme, slightly different budgets, different programmes, but they are related. So I suppose we can talk about the Security Research Programme first. That was set up way back when, the start of the War on Terror, basically, at the behest of interior ministries, police officials, and a substantial number of transnational arms and defense and IT companies, basically as a way to secure public subsidies for the development of new surveillance and security technologies. The hype was, well, technology can save us from terrorists, essentially.
Yeah.
We'll just set up surveillance systems, XYZ, and we'll it's not a political problem. The problem is we haven't got enough surveillance. And the current iteration of this is called Civil Security for Society. And that's part of the Horizon Europe research budget. Horizon Europe funds all kinds of things. Like, there's loads of good stuff, actually. Funds, research to healthcare, transport, green energy. But it also has its component about security research.
The Civil Security for Society fund, that used to be the Security Research Fund, is more indirectly used. For example, they use it to gather data and fund research that is used at a later point for border security and policing purposes.
Basically, the way it works is a work program is produced for, the year or for 2 years. It sets out topics of interest, usually very specific topics of interest, like we want to develop radar systems we can mount on drones to detect people in small boats at sea, or we want electro-optical systems that will let us see people through forest cover. Then if you want some of that money, let's say you are you work in a university department, IT department or something, or you are a an interior ministry or a police force, you say, oh, well, we want to develop this technology or this technique. You put together a consortium, you put together a proposal, you submit a proposal to the European Commission, that gets evaluated, and the proposals that score the highest receive the money. They then spend usually 3 or 4 years working in this consortium, usually consisting of private companies, academic or research institutions, and interior ministries or police forces or border agencies, government departments of some kind. And at the end of 4 years, they'll come back and say, well, we've done X, Y, and Z. We've developed this part of the technology. Well, it's the official evaluations of this program have tended to point out that they don't really produce very much actual product. But what they are good at is developing sort of network of these professionals across Europe. So it's kind of like a community building exercise. So that's a security research program. Basically, public subsidies for private development of security and surveillance technologies. So I suppose the short answer to that is, there's going to be a lot more EU money coming Greece's way, which will be used for border control, border surveillance, and thus implicated in the Greek pushback.
The ones that we just mentioned are only a few of the many different funds and projects that the EU maintains. But we don't have time in this program to talk about every single one. If you are interested to learn more about this, we have included a link in the description of this show to an in-depth report by the Transnational Institute and Statewatch that talks at length about the different funds and what they mean. Above all others, due to the nature of the funding of Fortress Europe, arms traders and military companies benefit greatly from these funds. In addition, corporations such as Thales have been providing research and development, military technology and defense policy consultancy to the EU. Thales is the 8th largest defense contractor in the world and generated $16.2 billion in 2021. It has been providing surveillance systems and military equipment to Frontex since the establishment of the agency Frontex itself, as well as to the border protection mechanisms of individual EU states. Thales has also acquired funding from the European Defence Fund and the European Peace Facility, which is the fund designated for build-up of internally developed weapons research, as well as the Integrated Border Management Fund, since Thales has also designed the border control systems in and out of the EU. These systems receive billions of euros in order to make it harder for people to even attempt migration. Issuing a more complex system on visas and similar procedures is a form of soft deterrence by ridding people from the possibilities of legal entry. Arms manufacturers, lobbying groups, think tanks, and consultancy firms are all heavily involved in formulating repressive policies related to border violence for profit as well. A notorious example would be McKinsey & Company, who are involved in numerous projects related to border violence and surveillance around the globe. Most famously, McKinsey was the creator of the framework of the EU-Turkey deal, which paved the way for the externalization of EU borders through neighboring countries such as Morocco, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Jordan, Armenia, Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Moldova. For scope, the EU pays Turkey nearly $1 billion a year and offers around $4 billion to countries in similar positions in order for them to detain migrants. McKinsey has been paid $992,000 by the European Asylum Support Office for its participation in drafting the EU-Turkey deal. Here is Lorraine from Legal Center Lesbos.
Yes, I mean, the EU-Turkey deal, which is not actually a treaty, it was a press statement between members of the EU and the Turkish state, which then actually became implemented into Greek law. But the stated purpose of this was to stop migration from Turkey to the European Union. This was I mean, they stated as to stop irregular migration, and they have this as always kind of, we want to stop the smuggling networks, we want to prevent people from irregularly crossing. But at the heart of it is they want to stop migration. So this has taken various, you know, within this, the pushback policy is completely in line with it, because it's a furtherance of politics and policies that are preventing people from crossing borders.
So a lot of money that is being generated by the EU through VAT and other sources is being spent on policing borders. But how does this money get involved in pushbacks? First of all, we know since some time now, at the hand of the report of OLAF, the European Anti-Fraud Office, which had launched an investigation into Frontex conduct, that according to them, Frontex is allowing pushbacks to proceed on their watch in territories where they are active. Frontex holds special events for security industrial lobbyists, where they work hand in hand to promote quote-unquote solutions based on techno fixes, from biometric surveillance to weapons technologies. These corporate interests are not neutral parties, but ultimately seek to shape Frontex's approach to border control in line with their interests, and to structurally benefit from procurement contracts. Meanwhile, the agency has no meaningful transparency or lobbying accountability mechanisms in place. From 2017 to 2019, Frontex met with 138 private bodies. Of these, 108 were companies, 10 research centers / think tanks, 15 university, including the Center of Research and Technology Hellas, and one NGO. European defense companies Airbus and Leonardo were awarded the most access, with 5 meetings each. Cybersecurity firm Gemalto scored 4 meetings in this period. Gemalto has since been acquired by Tails Group, which itself participated in 3 meetings with Frontex. Here is Chris from Statewatch. And I have another question regarding this budgetary cycle. How much does lobbying factor into that? Because this I couldn't really figure out. Like, researching lobbying in the EU is very hard, even though it's supposedly all transparent, and I couldn't really find a good source or a good way to really get an insight into how much money is going exactly where.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's quite a difficult one to answer, particularly in relation to like policing the border stuff. Certainly in relation to the new military funds, the European Defence Fund in particular, there's substantial long-standing evidence of the defence industry lobby, defence industry, the arms industry, being active at EU level in the EU institutions, you know, expert, or what do we call them, groups of personalities and expert roundtables appointed by the EU, which are made up of figures from the arms industry, who then obviously recommend that the EU should give them loads of money, and that is then what happens. Now, usually the lobbyists aren't entirely happy with this, but, you know, they can't complain too much when the public authorities set up a new $10 billion fund to pay for research projects. Again, there's obviously, you know, a business lobby for border technologies, border fences, you know, more equipment for police forces, and border guards, and the other state agencies. But the extent to which it is active at EU level and concerned with or like influential in producing the outcomes of these separate funds is, I think, still an open question. I think what we've said before in previous publications is you can see that there are mutually aligned interests, but it's impossible to say to what degree, you know, the public authorities are influenced by private industry. But certainly their interests coincide quite a lot. I mean, in terms of, you know, border controls, border infrastructure, there's a big enough lobby from like the governments of the member states and officials within the European Commission to say we should give more money to this.
A local example of a company that is evidently making more money off pushbacks happening in Greece in a more direct way is Lalizas, a Greek company that, amongst other things, produces the life rafts that have been proven to be used in conducting pushbacks. In many of the visual material that has been collected in reporting on Pushback, the distinctive design and or logo of La Lizas is visible, but can they be held accountable?
I mean, I'm a US lawyer, so my background is actually in bringing cases against corporations for complicity in human rights violations and for human rights abuses by these companies. So I'm not as familiar with the Greek civil code and how liability would be found. But in most contexts, if you aid and abet an entity in committing a crime, so that means you provide material support for a crime to be committed, usually you don't have to show that you have an intention for your support to be used to commit that crime. You just have to have knowledge that the most likely outcome of your support is that it's going to be used to commit a crime. So this can be then applied as well to the corporations, to this example of this corporation who's been selling life rafts to the Greek Coast Guard. At this point, the same as with the European Commission providing funds for Coast Guard vessels, they're providing life rafts to the Greek state, and they know that these are going to be used to abandon people at sea and that people's lives are going to be put at risk. So this is something that we're looking into how we can try to hold them accountable, whether in the public opinion, which is often more important than having a lawsuit, because lawsuits, again, they take years. There's always different ways that corporations and those responsible get out of being found liable in court. But I think, I mean, for us as well as lawyers, often the litigation that we get involved in has this dual purpose, both to raise awareness and, have some public condemnation, even if we don't have much hope that any of the courts will have a good outcome.
Several of the previously mentioned money flows are meant for or used by Frontex, both for practical matters like ships, but also for the development and research. However, practically speaking, the Hellenic Coast Guard seems to be much more involved in practicing pushbacks as far as we know. With material and moral support from Frontex, they are conducting pushbacks on a daily basis. They receive a lot of money from the EU through several of the aforementioned funds for equipment that is most certainly being used to push people back. Yeah, because I know that the flagship of the Hellenic Coast Guard, the Lambda Sigma 090, built by Damen Shipyards, is paid more or less, I would say, 82.5% with external security fund.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that's the other thing. There's always like rules on co-financing. So the EU will pay up to like 90% or 75% or 90%, and then the member state has to pay X amount. Obviously, it's a very heavily subsidized, the incentives to do that activity or build that thing are obviously substantial when you can get that much money for it from elsewhere.
The money that is being spent is a consequence of the decisions of the European Commission. They decide the budget, but also the extra funds that are made available to Greece in this case. The European Commission is undoubtedly aware of the fact that pushbacks are happening, yet they still chose to send money that they know is being used for these ends, and not only in Greece either. In Western Africa, the EU has been spending a lot of money in financial aid, and also a lot of money to buy fishing rights to the benefits of international corporations and other nations. Next, we will hear Hibai on the situation in Senegal and how the EU is implicated in that.
Yeah, Senegal, as other countries of Africa, is strongly depending on European funds. And this is not per case. It has deep roots on the colonization and the post-colonial policies that still rule in that part of the world. And that means that they are obliged to accept certain policies that are set up and that are decided in Europe in order to get funds. This was, for example, very clear and very obscene during the COVID pandemic, where even the funds for fighting against the pandemic were depending on the acceptance of on the migration policies from Europe. So Europe, the European Union, told to several countries, one of them Senegal, if you don't accept what we are deciding about migration policy, you won't get the fundings for nothing, but specifically for the pandemic. For example, Spain and Italy and other countries, they wanted to up until 10% of 10% of the funds supposedly fighting the pandemic must be assigned to migration policies and to control of the migration. This is because the pandemic has created also a situation where many young people without job, without other means, had decided last year to migrate. And it is, in the case of Senegal, it is also very, very related, not only with the disease, with the pandemic, but also with the situation created by European and other countries' vessels, specifically Canada, China, and the European Union, with the different fishing agreements, that they have two different, very deep impact in Senegal society. In one hand, they are fishing bigger fishes with in a industrial scale fishing that it has nothing to do with artisanal fishing. Artisanal fishing has no the capacity of fishing so much, so they can't go to the same places where the industrial vessels are. And the industrial vessels are vessels from Europe, as I say, from China, and many of them with Senegal flag, but with foreign investment. So they can't compete in the sense that where the industrial vessels are operating, there is no fish for artisanal fishermen. Also, there are very often accidents, so they literally, they can't go there.
The Daman Group has been providing military vessels to West African countries such as Senegal, Nigeria, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Under the West African Regional Fisheries Program, fishing has been banned or illegalized for the local communities on the coastal line of West Africa, and is instead done by multinational corporations who overexploit the fish stocks to produce products like fish meal. Fish meal is a product derived from fish to be supplied to other animals as food. The Daman Group has, for the most part, also supplied the Coast Guard agencies or defensive naval vessels for these states. So they are creating a situation that causes people to migrate, and a sustained situation that causes people to migrate. And in addition, they are criminalizing those who are migrating to Europe on the European border. Can you say, for example, about a company like Daman Shipyards, that they are involved with this kind of activities?
Yes, that kind of companies, they are benefiting from this in different ways. On one hand, the militarization of the borders and trying to, people from preventing people from migration means more police operations in the land, but specifically in the sea, to stop the boats who go, in the case of Senegal, towards Canary Island. More pressure in Moroccan and Western Sahara means the routes are more dangerous because are longer, and to control these routes, there are used boats like those fabricated by Daman. In another hand, there is this process of militarization of the border that puts that requires that different states require more equipment from them, as in the case of Greece, we can see clearly this link between the policies that are decided in the north to control the migrations from the south and the companies that are benefiting from these policies. It is not perchance that these companies are building more patrolling boats than ever.
So far, it seems that some companies like Ladizas that are involved with the pushbacks and the companies who receive money from different funds to develop the technologies involved are profiting. It is also interesting to note that when they are asked about their involvement, Ladizas refuse to respond. However, the EU itself or even the Greek state does not seem to be making any profit from pushbacks. Because of the clandestine nature of the practice and the fact that the people involved wear balaclavas and unmarked uniforms makes the question even more murky. Who are these people? And more importantly, who pays them, if they are getting paid at all? The people engaging in this have undoubtedly make it hard to identify themselves for this very reason, and at this time we cannot be sure to what organization or agency they belong, and therefore we can only speculate where they get their money from, if they are even getting paid.
I mean, I suppose the other point is there is a group of people who actually profit very directly from pushbacks, which is migrant smugglers, to the extent they're involved in, you know, facilitating people crossing borders. And I don't say that as a way to, I don't buy the narrative of the breaking the evil business model of the smugglers. These things are just supply and demand. And if migrant smugglers are making more money out of people who want to cross borders because they keep getting pushed back, or they have to take more difficult routes to avoid being pushed back, well, that's for fault of the policies that, you know, make those journeys possible in the first place. The very people that the EU, the UK, all the EU's member states sit around saying we must break the business model of these people, as you know, has been pointed out 1,000 times, that business model is the result of those government policies. Just considering the amount of EU money that is rolling around in the Greek economy, ironically, the EU being responsible for like trashing the Greek economy from 2008 onwards, but anyway, the amount of EU funds that go towards Greece, whether they be for policing, for borders, for various other things, it's entirely feasible, possible, plausible that some of that money ends up, certainly, like I said, with the border agencies in a formal way, and then who knows where else it may end up after that.
Whenever the European Commission speaks about increasing border security, they use terms like, quote, human trafficking and, quote, smugglers as a justification. One of the justifications, at least. And not only the EU, also the Greek state claims to oppose these practices. The people getting pushed back will try again because the various circumstances force them to do so. Often many, many times. This creates a reliable market for people looking to make a profit from the current situation. So while the Greek state and by extent the European Union are not directly making profits of pushbacks, there are clearly actors that do. These include not only the human traffickers and the smugglers, but also very much the companies that are using the current climate in order to get more money for their research. Research that is used to make it more difficult for people to try to find a better life. These technologies have never led to a decrease in migration. No matter how much money they will throw at it, people will still be forced to migrate because of the conditions that Europe and other Western countries create in the places where these people are from. But is there a way to hold these organizations or even the European Commission accountable for being complicit in this gross and structural violation of human rights? Until now, it seems to be very hard to inspire the EU to do so through their own accountability mechanisms. The partial success of the investigation conducted against Frontex as a result of possible complicity and pushbacks shows us an intimate portrait of some of the officers involved, whilst being well aware of not only the pushbacks and their implications with regards to human rights, but also the fact that it is their duty to intervene and or report. They actively try to keep evidence that pushbacks were happening from their superiors. Also, the European Court of Human Rights doesn't seem to be a real option. Have people tried to bring cases of pushbacks to the EU Court of Human Rights? And if you are aware of any, what was the result?
Yes, several cases have been brought now. The Legal Center Lesbos, we've brought 5 cases so far, starting from cases that we documented from 2020. 2 cases have now advanced to the second stage of the procedure, we don't know how long it will take for a decision to come out. The European Court of Human Rights is very slow, and also it's a political entity. So we've seen many cases for pushbacks in different contexts. For example, in the Macedonian-Greek border, in another case against Spain for pushbacks in their territory that's in the African continent, that these cases were eventually dismissed by the European Court of Human Rights for basically saying that because these people crossed the border without permission, they put their lives in danger, they put themselves in this situation, which led to them being pushed across the border. So we're not entirely hopeful that, you know, the European Court of Human Rights is going to be an answer to this, one, because of the length, and two, because there does seem to be a tendency to look for ways to dismiss cases rather than hold governments accountable when they're clearly committing crimes. What we do hope is that in these cases, we've tried to distinguish. It's not just that people are being pushed across a border. It's that they're being pushed across a border with extreme violence, where people's lives are in danger, where they're being abandoned at sea. So in these cases, we're highlighting that the acts themselves. Of course, it's illegal to push people across the border without allowing them to seek asylum. But on top of that, the torturous way in which these pushbacks are being carried out is further evidence of Greece's crimes.
From what we heard in this episode, we can conclude that the EU is using its tax money in ways that are not transparent, and that it is not even that the EU Commission is only turning a blind eye to the many deaths at sea and what happens on the beaches of Greece at night. In various ways, the EU is in fact directly or indirectly funding or paying organizations, groups and governments that are not acting in accordance with its supposed values. And not only that, they are in fact responsible for supporting systems that sustain those practices.
Nobody knows how many European vessels are operating there, because there is not a list of the ships. We don't know neither how many of the flags that are of the ships that have Senegalese flags have European funds, and we don't know neither how's been the process of negotiating this. Many local groups are saying that this is built on corruption, so this is not benefiting, not benefiting Senegalese people, but is all this done on behalf of Senegalese people according to European governments?
I mean, as I said, I think the amount of money involved is, what's the most obvious and staggering thing, just billions and billions of euros of public money being put into security architecture and infrastructure that really there's very little democratic control over. Like I say, it's, what level of control do they have over spending once it gets down to the national level? Obviously there is reporting and states can be audited and so on regarding what they do with this money. But, you know, if the EU funds a, you know, refits a border post between Greece and Turkey, pays for new surveillance infrastructure, upgrades the booths, the cabins, the offices, and actually that is then used as an informal detention site, well, obviously the EU money is paid for that. Now, that's not what they intended to pay for, but I think this is why it's obviously important to find out who is doing this, like who is involved in these activities on an individual basis, because there's like criminal acts have been committed that need to be answered for. And we also need to know where the money is coming from. But I think we shouldn't lose the bigger picture, that, which is essentially that by funding the Greek state's migration border control infrastructure, regardless of whether it goes directly to one particular unit or activity that we can say is directly implicated in the Y or Z act, you know, it's a major part of the picture. It has responsibility.
I mean, I think over the years in Lesbos, what we've seen is the European Commission and Greece testing how much they can get away with in terms of enforcing the borders, building up Fortress Europe, preventing people from crossing borders. And it's been an escalation of dehumanization and policies that are killing people here. And so now we're at a point where, with support of the European Commission, people are being thrown in the sea, people are being left abandoned in forest and dying. So the money has always been coming to Greece to enforce its borders. And I feel like it's really this. It's been a testing of how much they can get away with increasing amounts of violence and murderous practices towards migrants.
This episode was edited by Radio VC Mitalini for broadcasting on Radio Helsinki. Links to sources are available in the description. This episode would not have been possible without Chris Jones from Statewatch, Lorraine and Ozan from Legal Center Lesbos, Hebei, and Walt from Radio Helsinki.
Das war Von unten im Gespräch, eine Sendung der Nachrichtenredaktion von Radio Helsinki.